You're listening to Pushing the Envelope, Life at the Cutting Edge of Customs Innovation. I'm Tom Muller with the Cross Border Research Association. On this show, we explore the frontiers of customs creativity in conversations with customs and logistics experts, technology innovators, research scientists, and other leaders in the field. Industry insiders call this show the PenCast because it's part of PenCP, a network for boosting customs innovation funded by the European Union's Horizon 2020 program. Today, I'm speaking with Ashley Bell, Assistant Secretary for Customs and Border Modernization at the Australian Border Force. Prior to joining the ABF, Mr. Bell served in senior roles in Australian Treasury, including Director and Senior Advisor in the Markets Group, where he worked on corporate regulation and deregulation policy, and Director, Senior Advisor, and Policy Analyst working on tax policy, financial and corporate regulation, and not-for-profit reform. Mr. Bell also served from 2016 to 2019 as the Senior Treasury Representative and Senior Economic Diplomat in New Delhi, and describes himself as a keen observer of the Indian economy. Hello, Ash, and thank you very much for joining me today on Pushing the Envelope.
Thanks, Tom. It's lovely to be here.
Well, we met back in October in Hanoi for the World Customs Organization Technology Conference and Exhibition, where you gave a fascinating talk on empowering customs through artificial intelligence, an Australian perspective. And I found it fascinating, not only because you managed to say some very clear and compelling things about AI, machine learning, big data, which are subjects that, you know, all too often tend to be talked about in vague and pretty mushy language. But your talk was fascinating to me because of the uniquely Australian perspectives you brought to the subject. So I was really delighted when we arranged to have this PenCast to be able to dig in more to those themes.
Fantastic. Yeah, it was a real pleasure to be able to speak to the audience there, and particularly that intersection of industry and customs officials, academia. So it was a really good discussion. I think the whole conference, I think, was a it's always a real highlight of the year in terms of who goes, but also the discussions that are had both in the forum and outside of it.
Yeah, you said it, and that cross-pollinization of from different areas is very, very exciting. It was a fantastic group. My only complaint is I couldn't split myself into three or four and be at several talks concurrently because there were a lot to choose from. Mm-hmm. So to start off with, could you give our listeners a word about your background and what brought you to the Australian Border Force?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been a public servant and in the Australian Public Service my whole career. So coming out of law school as a fresh-faced graduate, I joined actually the tax office, and I'll never forget my first rotation, my first job was at the small business call center in Chermside in North Brisbane. And I got to tell you, no one calls the tax office to tell us, you know, what a great job we do, albeit that we do. But that for me was just such an important time because it put me front and center with the interface between government and citizen. And it's a lesson that's stuck with me throughout my entire career as I've moved through, done a lot of policy roles, a lot of economic policy, particularly in tax, financial markets. But I've always, and particularly in Treasury, it's a very kind of central policy, macro policy area. I've always wanted to come back to that coalface, that intersection of where reform changes the lives of people and it's tangible. So when an opportunity came, I'll never forget, I got an email that said the Commissioner of the Australian Border Force wants to meet with you. And I'm thinking, what could he possibly want to talk to a Treasury officer about? And it was to talk about the role in customs and border modernization, and particularly the work that we're doing as a part of our trade modernization agenda, the trade single window work. And I think, to be honest, it was his vision and his passion for the reform, his understanding of the kind of connection between what policy and operations can do together, that really sort of drove that interest. And, you know, the opportunity to be involved as a public official in structural reform or microeconomic reform, it's exactly what you get into it for. You know, that's the ability to put your thoughts and ideas towards making country a better place. And so for me, that's what drives me in terms of the work I seek out. I like big hairy challenges, I've quickly found out that in customs and trade, there's no shortage of those. It was an opportunity to do something different, but kind of connected to the core thing that I love to do anyway. So I found myself. So this is 3 years in now, and really loving it. It's been a really great decision. I've got a fantastic team, and continues to challenge me every day, but in a good way.
Yeah, it sounds like you have a good blend of challenges, but also satisfactions of a job that really fits what you want to be doing. Was the Commissioner Michael Outram? Was that the Commissioner called you in? Yeah.
Yeah, Commissioner Outram. Yeah, he was. It was a fantastic discussion. It's one of those things I think often in a professional sense, whether it's private or public sector, kind of the vision of your leader is really critical to sort of, you know, the value that you can all derive out of it. It's sort of one of those things that sort of sits with me even still.
Uh-huh. Yes, I know in preparation for our conversation, you recommended a couple of his speeches, which were very, very, very interesting reading and also definitely clicked with your approach. So not surprising. Speaking of big hairy challenges, which you love. I'm reading in the World Bank over the next 10 years, Australia is projected to see more than 70% increase in cargo imports. What's going on here, and what needs to happen to prepare your country for this influx of imports?
Yeah, look, I think some of the projections we've been working through, whether it's air cargo, sea cargo, it's showing a huge uptick. You know. And within that, there's nuances that are, I think, important as well. So in terms of the increase in e-commerce, structural changes to business processes coming out of COVID, changes to the supply chain, there is no sort of indicators that we've looked at that haven't sort of shown us that we're going to have an increasingly large challenge. And the figures that we've kind of reflected there in terms of that 70% increase have really necessitated us to look at how we can do our job more effectively, but also more efficiently. The challenge I think customs and trade officials around the world have is that it is that core tension or balance of facilitating trade, letting the trade flow, the economic benefit that comes with that, but also obviously making sure that the trade's coming through is legitimate, that the taxes and duties are paid, but also that there is no community harm that's coming across the border, and which itself has an economic element to it when we think of, social costs or increasing that security and confidence in the society. So I think, that tension means that we will always have a case that as those cargo volumes increase, we can't just put the foot on the brakes. We can't just stop the cargo at the border until we're happy that we've got it, or our current business processes may not necessarily scale effectively or efficiently. So a big part of that has been us investing now into a set of initiatives where we've been looking, particularly in the cargo space, at how we can intervene in the cargo process more efficiently and effectively, but also in partnership with industry. So it's also about having a more secure supply chain. It's also about dealing with the potential threat for criminal actors to intervene with engage with the cargo earlier. So there's a set of principles we've done, but I think the key part of how we're looking at this challenge of an increasing load with a reducing footprint is also about how do you bring technology, operational elements and workforce elements and policy together in one. I think a lot of the times we sort of look to one of those things to solve. But for me, it's got to be all three and working in tandem and on the top of that, just really genuine and deep consultation with industry, because their problems and challenges are ours as well. And it is that relationship that I think becomes critical. But yeah, look, I think 70% is kind of eye-watering, but I think we're up for the challenge. I think there's a way to navigate that, and the simple fact is that we have to get stuck into that work now to meet the challenge of the future.
Yeah, and getting that balance, as you say, between technology, operational elements, and workforce, making them aligned. It's all very well to roll out the big guns of AI, but if you don't teach your workforce how to be using them, it's just a pretty shiny object and perhaps gets in your way. What features do you see on the customs landscape, new products, new shipping methods, new fraud schemes, new economic structures, and so on, that will pose the biggest challenges in the work that you're going to be doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question because you can kind of take that a number of different ways. I mean, you're going to have the cross-border trade environment and the geopolitical and geoeconomic elements that go to that. A lot of that stuff is, you know, not within the control of customs officials, but it's certainly something that you need to be attuned to and understanding. You've got the business challenges, the way that businesses' supply chains and their own industry sort of structures are changing and evolving, and that includes with uptake of new technologies, that includes, you know, greater alignment of, new ways of doing work. So whether that's anything from a, you know, e-airway bill or e-bill of laden or verifiable credentials, you know, those kinds of big game changes that work across industry that are going to be a big change, but also just in the way that they do business. So the way that cargo is managed, you know, increases within fast express air courier versus, those same kinds of things coming through sea cargo domain, increase of mail, and the consumer preferences that drive that, I think, is the other part. So obviously e-commerce, the demand for goods and the speed in which they move, I think, is a big changer for that. Then obviously you've got those kind of, in the sea cargo space, the shipping elements, so changes in terms of the size of the ships that are coming through. Even that is a practical example. Like when I think about Australia, you know, the kinds of ships that we're going to have and the port infrastructure we have. Now, again, there's a lot when it comes to trade, and I'm constantly reminded by my team that whilst we can feel the weight of all of those challenges, we have to also be really clear-eyed, I think, as customs officials, to think about our role in that ecosystem and what it is that we need to do, where we need to support, but also where these are just things we need to have domain awareness around or understand the, you know, the kind of flow on effect. So look, I think there's no shortage of elements that are going to change and disrupt industry and our work as we go forward. And I think the key thing that we have as a tool to mitigate that, and something that the ABF and the Commissioner have been absolutely, focused on for a long time, but particularly of late, is our connection and engagement with industry stakeholders at all levels. You know, the capacity for us to know what's coming around the corner relies on an open dialogue. It relies on us having that trust and understanding that we need to solve these problems together. So for me, I'm always confident when I can be going out to some of our industry engagement fora and talking openly about what we're doing in trade modernization, where we're heading, and also to hear kind of that, some of their stories about, you know, issues facing their industry. Particularly interesting to hear from, customs brokers and, you know, those that are actually on the front line and what they are seeing happening to their industry in the future. That has been quite sort of helpful for us to then start to position our advice to government about, you know, things that we might need to do in a regulatory space. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it would be helpful. It is helpful, undoubtedly, for your job to to educate yourself more, to gather a good intelligence, but it's also helpful from the other side to gain trust in what you're doing, to say, hey, this guy really is coming and listening. He's paying attention and he's bringing that back home. Because that we'll talk about that. I'll have a couple questions later in the podcast about the difficulty in building trust and a sense of common purpose among different areas, public sector, private sector, academia. There can be a challenge there because people can be speaking very different languages.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. During my various conversations with customs insiders, Australia is often cited as an innovation leader in customs and duty collection. Could you cite a couple examples of, well, first of all, do you agree with this? And if so, could you cite a couple examples of how ABF is leading the way in these areas?
Yes, Tom, I would agree that we are innovative and wonderful, and I would applaud your insiders on their deft knowledge of such things. But now, look, you know as well as I do the Australian custom of cringing at a wonderful compliment. But look, this is something that I think it's core to how we think about our role in the ABF. Some of it, what is it? Necessity is the mother of all invention. And, when you've got the kinds of challenges that we have in terms of our size, but also, managing the border of a whole continent, it does require innovation to be supported at all levels. And that's everything from the big transformative, major IT projects and big legislative reforms and things, and certainly a lot of that my branch take forward. But to be honest, the thing I've been most impressed with when I've kind of to the, facilities at the front line and met with some of the officers is just that agile innovation as well. So the tweaks to processes that actually unlock or deal with a pain point, or the ability to connect that to other colleagues and find better ways to do things. It's look, I'm sure all administrations do that, but I feel like we have over time in the ABF really sought to cultivate that. It is something within our leadership discussions that is constantly at the forefront about how we can continue to drive that, and it comes from again a kind of DNA in terms of wanting to just do better, to find ways to be more efficient. There's a real drive here that I think is a cultural element to the organisation. And look, that's kind of reflected in the fact that, my branch and my teams are funded, right? The commissioner looks to us to identify ways that we can undertake these big and challenging reforms. It's an investment into the future of this organisation. So obviously within that international space, we don't just rest our laurels on domestic reform and kind of working at the border here. We're also really engaged within the WCO and within other areas to really help to support other customs administrations, whether it's in our Asian region or kind of further abroad. So we are looking also to drive that discussion forward, and that sort of, mentality is what, sent me out to Vietnam and to meet you and to talk to all of our wonderful colleagues around what we were doing. In terms of innovation leader or some of that more cutting edge parts, it's kind of interesting, right? Like I look to other administrations and I see such interesting and really kind of meaty pieces of work, and I'm always sort of a little bit jealous. But then I sort of talk to our teams and sort of see the work we're doing, and I go, actually, what? I think we might be doing something that, there's not too many others that are looking at. One of my favourite projects that we're looking at, it's in a trial stage, but there's a piece of work that we've been doing, which we call the Digital Verification Project. The DVP is because, I'm a public servant, Tom, so I love acronyms. But
you have to get the acronym in there for sure.
I've got a KPI to meet, Tom, on acronyms, so I'll meet and surpass. In a nutshell, one of the biggest challenges for cross-border trade is trust. It's also paper and the cost of paper. And so one of the solutions or technologies that we've looked to and explored is around verifiable credentials. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of others that are looking at that, and particularly, you know, UNEDIFACT and a whole bunch of others that are and other administrations that are right on this. But what we wanted to do was to just trial to see, could we create verifiable credentials technology in a platform anchored to trust within the ABF that could help support, for example, digitalizing the, you know, authentication of a certificate of origin, for example. And so we undertook a trial with Singapore Customs, which was really good. And we've done a bunch of work in terms of tweaking that platform and looking at new opportunities to trial going forward. And I think initially the platform we had was built around blockchain element, but you know, we've also been adapting and evolving to where the technology is moving as well, and I think that's critical and a real benefit of the trial environment. So in terms of being innovation leaders, you know, one of the things that I'm impressed with what we've done within the team is to not just sort of sit back and lock ourselves into a technology and say, well, this is what we've invested in, so here we are, but actually the ability to pivot with technology to see what is evolving as a consensus, to engage in the dialogue internationally around standards and where things are heading, and not to be so stuck in our ways that we just fold, continue to unfold in a particular direction. So that, for those reasons, I think that project certainly for me really underscores something where we get to do exciting things with technology. We get to look to ways to solve wicked problems. But I think also we're hopefully starting to also drive that discussion internationally around the use of VC technology and trade and customs.
Well, staying fluid like that, not committing to one and only approach, not only is it important in a fast-moving environment, but it also requires a great deal of institutional and personal confidence that you don't feel like you're making your reputation on this project and it has to succeed or else. I run into that time and again where someone really gets bound up, their career feelings are bound up in one particular approach. And if that, and they're going to make that happen come hell or high water. And that's the recipe for disaster in a world that's moving so fast and adapting so quickly. So yeah, that's a very good sign about your organizational culture that you're able to sort of keep open and go with the flow, as it were.
Within the constructs of ensuring we're always getting value for money for taxpayers and meeting our government's objectives, of course. But yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't want you to think it's too loose. But I think for like modernization areas or innovation areas in government organizations particularly, it is actually one of these things that is a challenge to have that flexibility of thought. And, you know, for some government, some administrations probably more than others, but it does require a different style of thinking in public administration and to be okay with being within a trial phase and knowing what that means. It means this might not actually be the solution we need. But hey, we've done the work, we've spoken with industry, we've got the best advice we've got, and we've put something to it. And I think that to me is a tremendous public value that you can measure. But perhaps it's probably more to do with the psychological elements of how people work in terms of wanting to get to an end and you know, mission accomplished. And so it does, yeah, I think you're right, it does sort of push against that sort of, that feeling of, oh, well, you know, we've sunk a lot into this, you know, we've got to keep going. But I don't know. I'm not sure that I think that innovation is best achieved that way.
No, absolutely. The sunk cost dangers of sunk cost thinking are great and always, always in waiting to spring. I do want to go into trade modernization and the digital verification project in more detail, but I have one more kind of cultural geographical question, and I've always been fascinated in my time in Australia that since of people constantly reminding themselves and reminding others, you know, we're way down at the bottom of the world. we're an island continent. I mean, first of all, it's true. But the extent to which it's constantly present in people's minds in Australia has been interesting to me. How much do you think that unique geography and that unique sense of being, you know, being an island continent has influenced ABF's work? What factors do you think grow out of that have helped you to be so forward thinking in the customs area? I mean, for instance, in your Hanoi talk, you talked about the Australian border as our strategic national asset. And ABF Commissioner Michael Outram recently called ABF the stewards of the border. Are these unusual ways of thinking about national borders, do you think?
I don't think unusual. I think what we're looking to do, and certainly in the kind of commissioner's remarks, where he really challenged us to step up in our thinking, is to understand better that ecosystem that I was talking about. The, you know, it's not, there's not just one avenue. It's not just a linear process. It's not just one package doing one thing. It is huge. It is fast. It is messy, and it's complex. And so, you know, but it's also incredibly important for Australia. We are a island continent, massive, massive border. And, you know, not that I would think that it would be efficient, but even if you lined up every ABF officer around the border, you know,
you'd have to have long arms to do any good.
We're not going to stuff a lot of stuff that way. But we've got ports that are, you know, located where our major populations are, which is on that, you know, southern kind of east coast side. Again, not necessarily the closest connection to, for example, Southeast Asia, which would be up in Darwin or North Queensland, or to the Indian Ocean, which would be, you know, Western Australia. So where our ports are located, where our airports, where our the bulk of our people and, you know, that are needing those goods, is also kind of in a different space than, you know, where you would think it would be. So for us, that tyranny of distance has always been, I think, a public policy driver for Australia, whether it's in infrastructure, communications, different things. You know, we have a large landmass to connect. And so when it comes to the border, I think, you know, where the commission challenges is to think bigger, to think more broadly about the economic elements of what we do at the border. You know, having no land borders as well, I would add to that what my colleagues in our agricultural department manage through our biosecurity elements. So I think our biosecurity requirements are pretty well understood to be, you know, high and necessarily so. You know, we've got unique biodiversity in Australia that is nowhere else. You know, it's a rabies-free continent. There's a lot of amazing benefits that we have environmentally and obviously economic elements of that. So those biosecurity elements become critical. You know, one bug coming across the border could be devastating to our industries. So, you know, it has an economic dimension, and it has obviously a strategic dimension. And I think it's about pushing our thinking beyond perhaps just sort of linear pathways of, well, this is a national security element, or this is a trade revenue component, and actually to think about how all of the pieces come together. And importantly, to what the commissioner said around our role as stewards, to thinking about how we work with and partner with others in that ecosystem, particularly industry. And I think that is a critical piece. Like, stewardship is a key component of not just the ABF, but across the Australian Public Service. We really take our role seriously beyond the day-to-day tasks. It's about thinking of the institution, and it's about institutional thinking into the future. And so I guess the privilege I have in my role is that, you know, my teams and I are putting our efforts to creating those systems for the future, to ensure that the ABF officers of the future have exactly what they need to tackle the challenges that they're going to have. And I think that's the element of stewardship. It's investing now into the asset to make sure that it continues to pay those kinds of dividends. And I think those economic incidents of the border probably aren't as talked about as much. You know, there might be a lot of discussion about, oh, we seized, you know, X, kilos or tons of this drug and, you know, it has a street value of XYZ. But what's the social harm reduction value there? You know, we saved this many lives today. And it's true. The stuff we stop at the border is just so critical. And yes, that has a welfare element, but it also has an economic element too. So I think it's just taking that idea of the border and really thinking through the multitude of factors and kind of public policy benefits that good border management can bring to our country, and justifying, I guess, you know, if you've got a great asset, you want to invest in it, right? You want to maintain it, but also you want to make sure it's paying the dividends that it should. And, you know, where you got a tweak here or there, that's the kind of mindset that we take. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting concept. I'd be interested to take that discussion forward, you know, with other administrations. I know it's a conversation that the commissioner's had and he spoke about in some of his speeches and articles, but it is that element of redefining what we do in customs and trade in a perhaps a more sort of modern perspective.
This concludes the first part of my PenCast conversation with Mr. Ashley Bell, Assistant Secretary for Customs and Border Modernization at the Australian Border Force. Tune in soon for the second segment of our talk. Thank you.